Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the IL Preps Podcast. I'm Terry Foy, joined once again by Ty Zanders. And Ty, it's been almost 50 days since September 1st, and what a rollicking 50 days it has been. We are talking about the class of 2021, past the 150 commits barrier, averaging 3 commits per day. And that's without taking into account some pretty significant news in the class of 2020 as well. But we will get to that. First things first, how do you regard the rate of activity that we've seen in the recruiting landscape since September 1st, but maybe more specifically since, you know, about kind of the third week in September?
Yeah, I mean, there's been just a dramatic, you know, spike in that third week. I mean, to me, the way I look at that spike is just really, like, I think that kids usually try and make 3 visits at least. And, you know, if you do the math, you know, that the 23rd or so kind of marks, you know, three weekends to be able to do, you know, visits. Assuming you have, you know, one school of a weekend, with many guys, you know, doing 2, I feel like that's about right. But the volume of commitments that we've seen the last month and, you know, since 9-1 as a whole, just far exceeds my expectations that I had, you know, heading into September 1st. I mean, I expected about maybe 30, 40 commitments in September. And, you know, I think it was closer to maybe, you know, 70, 75. So just pretty wild activity and a lot of, you know, 5 stars and top 100 kids off the board. And, you know, some really good players still on the board. So, you know, more than anything, I'm just, you know, surprised, but really enjoying all the activity in the 21 class.
So I want to start there. You mentioned some really good players off the board. And when we spoke heading into the September 1st, we were talking about the 21 rankings and what was so unusual about the process. There were 6 committed players in the class of 2021 heading into September 1st. So this was kind of the first time that we were dealing with that blank slate and not really utilizing commitments as kind of a point of evidence when you ranked a player. 32 of the top 100 are uncommitted, which means that 68 ranked players have committed, which is a little bit less than half of the overall players committed. How do you regard what the commitments say about the accuracy of the rankings?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. And I think, you know, starting at the very top, you know, like, it's almost validating. I mean, it's what we expected. I mean, you're going to have, you know, kids fly off the board that, you know, going to Virginia, you know, or Maryland, you know, certainly Yale, UNC, all these type schools. You know, that's not a tremendous surprise. You know, maybe somewhat of a surprise at how quickly it happened. But, you know, getting back to the answer itself, I think, you know, what is interesting, and, you know, we have to understand there's some variables, you know, that come with it, but, you know, there was a pretty wide swath of schools represented, you know, I mean, somewhere between 50 and 100 that kids ended up committing to in the last couple of weeks. You know, I mean, High Point, you had Utah, you had Providence. And those aren't exactly the usual suspects. I mean, Air Force, you know, Army's gotten some really good talent. You know, I mean, I think that there's a wide array of schools represented and probably more than usual. I recall off the top of my head in the past maybe having somewhere around 27 schools in the top 100 when all the kids were committed coming into the rankings. But, you know, with this, we could see more. So it's definitely been a wide array, and like I mentioned, the usual suspects, the Carolinas and Hopkins, Virginias, you know, will just gobble, you know, top kids up. But I think we've seen a pretty, you know, diverse representation from these schools.
And 6 of the 21 5-stars are uncommitted, and so it speaks to the fact that some of the most highly sought after players are taking their time. So let's start with the number one player in the class, Andrew McAdory, who has not yet made his decision. What does that say about what's going on, the approach, all that good stuff?
Yeah, so he's obviously an intriguing one. I mean, any number one recruit is, but you know, as far as I know, he's the only five star, the uncommitted only five star that's uncommitted that isn't playing football. You know, which has an impact on, you know, the timeline for the other guys. But you know, McAdory has taken several visits. You know, I think he's kind of taking his time and weighing his options. He has some phenomenal options. I know he has another visit lined up this weekend, and you know, I'm getting the sense that he's pretty close to coming to a decision. You know, I think it'll happen in the next, you know, week or 10 days. You know, but I think it's definitely interesting that, you know, that's where he currently is. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, I think Brendan O'Neill's decision, you know, came actually, yeah, a year ago today. You know, Brendan O'Neill committed after being committed to Penn State previously. So, you know, it's not crazy. I think he's just, you know, really just weighing his options and taking his time, because he has, you know, some really good options. I mean, Notre Dame and Virginia may be the front runners. I mean, he's been to Michigan, he's going to Maryland, you know, and he's been to Penn State as well. You know, Duke's in the mix. So I think that, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with him and the domino effect that it has in the rest of the class. You know, if I mean, everyone wants to play the top players, and I think that kids around him, you know, whether it's five stars or four stars or whoever really, will want to join whatever class he's in. So there will definitely be a domino effect.
One of the more interesting stories that we've seen in the class of 2021 so far was JoJo Todaro, one of those players who was committed prior to the rule change to Syracuse. He's a five-star, the last five-star in, or the lowest-ranked five-star in our 2021 class. He was ranked number 20, a defenseman from Cary High School on Long Island. Plays for a couple of legendary defensemen, one from Syracuse and one from Johns Hopkins. And on October 13th, you reported that he had changed his commitment from the Orange to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, that was, you know, somewhat unexpected and somewhat expected. You know, I didn't expect to be at the Ravens game and have that notification pop up on my phone. But, you know, I think it's really, you know, interesting news. I'm looking forward to hopefully talking to JoJo at some point, you know, because he had made that commitment to the Orange in 2016 or 2017. You know, after his, you know, his club is run by Pat McCabe, the Syracuse legend you're mentioning. And, you know, I know he's coached as well by John D. Tommaso. So, you know, he fits the mold of a Big Ten defenseman, ACC defenseman, just plays the mean streak, very physical, you know, high motor. But, you know, I think it is, you know, really interesting to consider, you know, what went into his decision and what factors, you know, and why he picked, you know, Hopkins, even though he had a really attractive situation, you know, that he'd eventually potentially head into in Syracuse. So, yeah, I mean, more than anything, I'm just, you know, very curious to see how many more flips we see in the near future. Or, I mean, in general, rather, because I don't think anything's going to happen in the near future.
So let's use Todaro's decision to choose Hopkins as a jumping off point for talking about some of the classes, because one of the interesting things that has developed as a result of all this activity is that the number of ranked players, which, you know, isn't necessarily gospel relative to whether or not you can build a good class. I mean, obviously, one of the elements of the way in which the evaluating this class of 2021 has unfolded is, you know, the number of four stars that have been added since the rankings came out brings the total number of four stars, or the total number of four and five stars, to 150, and the total number of four stars to 100 and, I guess, 31 or 129. That being said, there were a couple of classes that, you know, weren't landing commitments, a couple of notable programs that weren't landing commitments through, say, late September, early October, and you kind of wondered, like, uh-oh, are these groups in trouble? And then, you know, all it takes is one or two or three, and, you know, the tide can turn pretty quickly. And in my opinion, that's, you know, the Blue Jays are an example for whom that happened, you know, they're up to 8 commits, including 6 players in the top 100. And of those, I believe, you know, 3 or 4 of them committed, or maybe even 4 or 5 committed in the month of October. They've committed in the last 2.5 weeks, as opposed to that first month of recruitment. So what was it like watching these classes come together?
Yeah, I mean, the Hopkins one, I think, stands out. The Hopkins class stands out because they did kind of have a slow start. I mean, they got, you know, 2 kids, Nick Kaufman and Sam Teachout, that, you know, were not starred, but, you know, definitely kids that I enjoyed watching this summer. I think have a lot of potential. And then, you know, landed some much bigger names. I mean, they added a face-off guy on September 30th, and then, you know, in the first 2 weeks of October, you know, added a midi from Calvert Hall and Ethan Long, number 58. You know, the number 3 goalie, Andy Demopoulos from Darien, you know, and numbers, I think he's number 23 overall. And then, you know, that pair of 5 stars and Todaro and previously a week earlier, Jay Cohen from Landon. And, you know, I think they really made a statement with those gets there, and will be good to build around. I think they just really need some offensive talent. Or they're in the mix, you know, for a 5-star or 2 right now and have their eyes on some others. But, you don't need to kind of bolster that offensive unit, although they're pretty, you know, really good shape in the 20 class. So it's not as much of a concern as it is in the 20 in the 21. So yeah, Hopkins is a group that stands out. You know, I think on the flip side of that, and I'll get back to a couple more classes. I mean, Duke, you know, is somewhat head scratching in the sense that, I mean, they've had Liam McLean on board for a long time. He's a 20 at Rye Country Day. He's going to PG, a good attackman. And then number 29, junior Reed Landon from Episcopal Dallas, a lefty midi, a big lefty midi, who scores a lot of goals. You know, he committed, you know, pretty recently. But, you know, outside of those two, I'm just really not sure what's going to happen with the rest of their class. And of course, they're going to, you know, pretty much get, you know, I'm sure they'll shut me up by getting some studs the next few weeks, but, you know, their class isn't coming together like I thought it would. You know, and I'm not sure what the reason is there, but, you know, it's definitely something that catches my eye.
That being said, it is one of those things that can happen in the way that, you know, classes can be cyclical and they are bringing in really, really good groups in the 19 and 20, you know, if that's where they spent a lot of their scholarship dollars and created some backlogs for guys that are looking for playing time, you know, maybe it's not as much of a cause for concern for Blue Devils fans as it is a reflection of something that the coaching staff was prepared for and, you know, kind of built for. But on the other hand, it's also the possibility that, you know, their 20 class didn't look like it does now a year out. You know, their 19 class also went through a lot of changes as well. So that's kind of the second point that you were making.
Yeah, and they and no one, you know, should panic. You know, I really, at the end of the day, it's Duke, and they are in a unique position because I feel as though, you know, they have the highest percentage of anybody in the country when it comes to, you know, the amount of commitments that they get. You know, relative to the offers they give out, you know, which is to say, not often does Duke give a kid an offer and get turned down. You know, I know it's happened maybe 2 or 3 times to my knowledge, you know, and that's just what I know. I mean, maybe a handful more in the 21 class, you know, with some other names like Matt Nunes and Chase Mullins. But, you know, I think they'll be just fine because it's Duke, you know, and they will get a who's who of talent regardless.
You mentioned Chase Mullins, and I wanted to quickly touch on Maryland because they were kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum from Hopkins in the sense that they came out of the gate really fast, first with Dante Trader and then with Chase Mullins as early pickups that kind of bolstered the class. And then in quick succession, actually within the same day, I think we saw a trio of commitments in Kevin Tucker, Charlie Corris, and Braden Irksa.
Yeah, I mean, I think Maryland's class, if you look at it, it's very reliant on, you know, local talent, you know, between the NCAA, you know, the IAC, Georgetown preps, you know, Zach Whittier, and then Trader. I mean, it's just, he's from Delaware, but playing at McDonough now. You know, I mean, everyone but Irksa in that class is from a bordering state, you know, of Maryland. And, you know, some really impressive talent there, and some kids I think that will kind of rise up the ranks. You know, Whittier and Weston Schmidt, you know, a goalie from St. Mary's, I think are definitely names to watch. But I'm a big fan of this Maryland group, and I know that they're pretty close with some D guys right now.
There are a couple of usual suspects that deserve to be mentioned. North Carolina has seven players in this class right now, all of them in the top 100. Notre Dame, five players in the class, four of them ranked. Not a ton of surprises there. Penn State in a similar situation, six players, five of them ranked. But one group that I particularly want to point out is Ohio State, who in landing Bobby Van Buren, AJ Hernandez and James Gurr, picked up three ranked players since September 1st. And for me, that's particularly important on the heels of what happened in the class of 2020, where they had some high profile decommitments coming away from September 1st last year. What do you make of the Buckeyes group?
I think you have to start with Van Buren, because, you know, I mean, to me, you know, based on the intel that I'd gathered, like, that was the biggest surprise and the biggest statement, honestly, of any, you know, five-star commitments to date, because I felt like he was almost a lock to UNC, you know.
He's in-state, from North Carolina, yeah.
Exactly, you know, that in-state tuition. I know he was making a second visit to Carolina, and, you know, I think that they, you know, I'm sure that Ohio State felt like, you know, Carolina was maybe in the driver's seat, but, you know, had Van Buren, you know, to campus, and you know, needless to say, they dazzled him and got him to commit. I think it was that Sunday. You know, so I mean, that was massive for them, and definitely made a statement. And, you know, to also have AJ Hernandez around him, who was another kid who was recruited by, you know, and offered by Carolina, in addition to James Gurr, you know, a hard shooting middie from Georgia, who I loved at Showtime with Thunder. I mean, I think there's a pipeline, you know, coming along from Georgia for the Buckeyes that, you know, has them in awfully good shape. So I like that group, and, you know, it's certainly getting ultra competitive in the Big Ten.
So anything else in terms of the way that the classes are coming together in the class of 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I like to start from Yale. I think they got some kids that, you know, really fit the mold of Yale players. I mean, Leo Johnson, Johnny Keeb, and you know, Mac Rodriguez, I think, you know, all from excellent programs and all ranked players. And then Virginia, you know, definitely made a big splash with you know, top-ranked goalie Matt Nunes, number three, and number nine, junior Cody Hart, and then Tucker Mullen. I mean, those are, I think what's impressive about that group is just the wide swath of geography you have going on there. You have a kid from Norfolk, a kid from Florida who plays at Taft School, Oregon, and then Houston. So, you know, not exactly, you know, normal recruiting grounds for Virginia, but, you know, those groups stand out. And like you said, North Carolina's group is just tremendous. I mean, they're getting size, they're getting skill, you know, they're getting some bullies from Philly. So, you know, UNC and Notre Dame as well, I think, stand out to me, with Notre Dame having, you know, a really good chance at landing, you know, a couple of these uncommitted five stars, you know, particularly some kids from Long Island.
Well, and probably continuing with the family theme, or potentially continuing with the family theme, we haven't mentioned number two recruit, Keith Boyer, from the Hudson Valley area, the brother of Jose Boyer, who's currently on the Fighting Irish roster. Is there anything about him that you can share?
Yeah, you know, I know, you know, the impression I'm under is that he's looking at Duke and Notre Dame. You know, I had heard originally that Yale was in the mix, and those were kind of schools that he was focusing on. You know, and to me, a storyline that, you know, kind of caught my eye was just the notion of the family connections. You know, they've already secured Chris Kavanaugh, you know, of course, the brother of Matt, and Patrick, a freshman, and then Brendan, you know, who played at Hofstra and is MLL All-Star at the Outlaws. You know, they got Kavanaugh on a huge visit weekend, and, you know, I think if they can get Boyer, and then Jackson Gray from Culver, who's currently playing football, but his brother Bobby, who played at Notre Dame, you know, that's huge. And then Michael Ridgeway, they also have committed, who I believe his cousin You know, is Kevin, a former Georgetown prep, Notre Dame, you know, defenseman, I think, you know, close to 15 years now, you know, 15 years ago. So, definitely some family ties there. And I'm really, really anxious to see what happens with the Fighting Irish because, you know, I mean, I mentioned the Ohio State statement. I think that if Notre Dame can land, you know, one or two more top 10, you know, recruits in the junior class, I think it'll make a huge statement, you know, in terms of what Kevin Corrigan, and his staff show in life after, you know, Jerry Byrne. I think Ryan Wallner has done an outstanding job, you know, getting kids to campus and just really the ultimate salesman. I think that Notre Dame should expect some good news these next few weeks.
Anything more before we move on to class 2020?
That's all I got. I mean, I think the last thing I'll add is we have a ton of content going up next week that I'm pretty fired up to release some data on the 21s and, you know, look at a bunch of the 4 and 5 stars and some interviews with the 5 stars. So you definitely check back next week, but we'll have just a load of junior, you know, junior content on IL.
Well, we're about a month out from the NL National Letter of Intent signing week, and we had 3 notable flips in 10 days. First, Jake Naso, face-off specialist from St. Anthony's, switched from Virginia to Duke. Sam King, an attackman from Gilman, switched from Denver to Harvard. And Owen Hiltz, an attackman who can play midfield or a midfielder who can play attack from Culver, switched from Denver to Syracuse. What did you make of these 3 switches?
I mean, it was just wild, you know, how it went down. I mean, the Naso, you know, move was you know, kind of like out of the blue. You know, I later heard that he was, you know, looking around and you know, Virginia, you know, certainly has a good group of face-off guys committed or on the roster rather. And Duke, you know, for as great as they've been in the past, not often have they had like a super highly recruited, you know, face-off guy. You know, they did great with Fowler and they have, you know, Ginder and Joe Stein and Brian Smith now. You know, but Naso is the top face-off guy in the class and that was just, you know, monumental for them. You know, to add him alongside having, you know, his teammates in Denenza and Brendan O'Neill, of course. But yeah, that was huge. And then the other ones, I think, were a little bit more expected and not out of, you know, thin air in my book. But, you know, Sam King, I think the world of, I think he's the lowest ranked 5-star, but someone who earned, you know, MVP honors at Under Armour, just, you know, undersized, you know, super tough. He's a hockey kid. Quick as a hiccup with his change of direction and just, you know, just routinely just crushes, you know, big 6'2", 6'3" defenseman, takes him to the rack, you know? So, I mean, those are the two that, I think are interesting storylines, but I mean, the Hiltz flip, I mean, what was your overall impression of, you know, when that was going down? Because I think that's the biggest flip that we've ever seen, you know, during senior year.
Yeah. I mean, presuming that we are classifying a flip separate from a opening up a commitment and switching, because that, you know, was I guess, otherwise, how do you qualify, or how do you compare it to O'Neill's switch last year? Or are you specifying
just
it as
senior year?
Senior year.
Yeah, senior year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I think for me, the most notable aspect of it was how much and how consistently Hiltz's stock continued to rise. Heading into September 1st, I think it was fair to say that he was the most sought-after uncommitted player. So when he committed to Denver, and he did so very quickly after September 1st...
A weekend, yep.
Yeah, it wasn't shocking in the sense that, you know, a Canadian going to Denver was not unheard of. But on the other hand, it was a little bit surprising because you would presume that no one was going to get as much, no uncommitted player was going to get as much outreach as he was going to get. So the fact that he made that decision quickly relative to, you know, O'Neill, who we just referenced, who was committed, got all this outreach, and took, you know, 6-7 weeks in order to make his decision. That aspect of it kind of surprised me. You know, that being said, obviously, I've always, you know, kind of compared him to Alex Simmons. So the fact that there was some familiarity with the experience was not, you know, it made it make a little bit more sense. But, you know, whether it was this past spring with Culver, you know, certainly what Hilst did at Committed Academy, where he stood out as potentially the best player there, you know, it wasn't a shock that guys continue to go after him. And I think for me, the most significant development was Pat March leaving Princeton to join Syracuse's staff. We know that there had been a significant relationship between Princeton and Culver, and I think it's fair to assume or consider the possibility that maybe Hilst academically couldn't quite make it work at Princeton, but could make it work at Syracuse. And so when the Syracuse staff included someone with whom he was familiar, it all of a sudden changed the calculus a little bit. And so that's, you know, kind of the way that I consider the run-up to it. And then as far as the outcome or the fallout is concerned, you know, I just look at it and say, what a reversal for what had been this class of 2020, particularly with respect to switched commitments for the Orange. And when people consider and think about and classify it and group it together with Chase Scanlon, I consider it to be a pretty different thing. You know, Scanlon, we've talked a fair amount on Inside Lacrosse's platforms about his skill set and what he's capable of doing. You know, he's going to bring a lot of excitement and production to the Dome, but he's not Owen Hilst in terms of his ability to both create and manage an offense. And I think Hilst is going to look very familiar to Syracuse fans who are used to guys who can make everything happen, make everything run through them. I'm not saying that's necessarily his destiny or what he's going to do, but he has that potential in a way that, you know, Paul Carcaterra and others have said, you know, it's been a long time since someone like this stepped foot in the Dome as a freshman.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, the point that I was going to make. You know, I know, you know, seen on Instagram, Carc got some, you know, got a hard time over calling Hilst, you know, the most skilled and highly touted attack recruit to come to the Carrier Dome since, you know, Mikey Powell. And I think that, you know, one, I don't disagree, you know, at all. I think that he's spot on there. But I think that you have to understand there's a big difference between, you know, a phenomenal attackman and a phenomenal attack recruit, you know. But Hilst is someone, like, the way that I look at it, like, you know, Syracuse definitely took a huge hit, you know, from an optics standpoint. They lost, you know, four class of 2020, you know, kids in 40 days. And, you know, I think it was like six top 100 kids, you know, in a pretty short time. And, you know, with no disrespect meant for the kids they lost, I mean, I would rather have, you know, Hilst on my roster than three, four, five of those kids combined almost. I mean, maybe that's like super far-fetched to some people, but like I would take, you know, Hilst over, you know, a package of three former Syracuse, you know, top 100 players just because he does so much. And I think that, you know, he's as versatile as a Canadian, you know, as you'll find. And I think what people will be impressed with, obviously you can go to the goal and make things happen, but his vision is just off the charts. It's superb. I mean, he just sees the field, you know, in an absolutely impeccable manner. And I think that's like what stands out to me. So it'll be fun to watch him and, you know, certainly watch him on TV. There are some people that feel like he's just as good and will make just as an impact as Brendan O'Neill will at Duke. So I'm intrigued to see what Syracuse can do. And also, you know, I mentioned the phrase domino effect earlier in the conversation. Like, I'm really, really interested to see, you know, what kind of domino effect, you know, occurs in the 21 class of Syracuse. Are they able to secure some ranked players and some four stars because people look at this Hilst commitment? So that's what I want to see.
So before we move off of Hilst, I just want to do my best Zach Lowe impression real quick, because when you talk about his vision, I just want to prepare Syracuse fans and college lacrosse fans who haven't seen him play for what is going to end up being one of the more spectacular, repeated highlights that I expect from this kid. So first and foremost, he is a Canadian, so he's pretty one-handed. We talked about his ability to play attack in midfield, and the reason that that distinction is, you know, a little bit more muted is because, you know, he can dodge down the alley, or he can dodge from the wing, and he can also invert and dodge from X. But the thing I love the most about his game is if he is dodging down the alley, he can get so deep that he basically can carry his defender almost to goal line extended, and yet his ability to throw a crossbody pass 270 degrees from the direction that he's running. So he's basically feeding a step down shot at the other top, at the top of the box on the other side of the defense. And, you know, that's the guy that is left open. That's the guy that the second slide is sagging off of. And it's just how consistently he is able to put that pass in a position. It's a 30, 35-yard pass, and he's able to consistently put it in a position with that it can be catched and caught and released faster than the defense can close out on him. And it's arriving, again, accurately and fast. I mean, he's a 30-30, 40-40 type player as in college lacrosse, and I think he's going to bring a lot of Syracuse fans to their feet.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to touch on the versatility, I mean, you know, versatility within lacrosse can mean so many different things. You know, I mean, I'm sure I've called a kid versatile for playing, you know, both attack and midfield, but I think, like, you know, with Hill, it's like, sure, he does that, but he can do so much more. I mean, I've seen him, you know, strip some top 30 players, you know, in the middle of the field. I've seen him take faceoffs. He could play defense if he wanted to. I mean, he was winning faceoffs, you know, with the National High School Lacrosse Showcase in, you know, over the summer. I mean, against some players that are pretty well known. He can do pretty much anything that you ask of him. And, you know, I more than anything, I'm just jealous of John Poser and Owen's, you know, Culver teammates going to see him practice every day, because the things that he doesn't practice, I'm sure, you know, far exceed what he can do in a game, I'm sure. Hiltz is tremendous, and I mean, just a massive, massive get for Syracuse, and, you know, should instill some confidence in those fans. I think we're certainly getting down after losing all those, you know, highly recruited, highly ranked players. But they'll be just fine. I think, you know, even aside from Hiltz, I think that they do a good job, you know, getting the JUCO kids and the natives and, you know, adding transfers. But this get is, you know, one of the bigger recruits, you know, in a while for the Orange.
So before we get to an interview with Corgan Sports Enterprise President Lee Corgan, where we talk about the Under Armour Callback Academy, briefly want to point you in the direction of InsideLacrosse.com to check out content coming away from the Carolina Prospect Day. Our staff headed down to Bermuda Run, North Carolina, outside of Winston-Salem, where about 200 players were in attendance. There were over 60 player evaluations created from this, as well as an all-tournament team. Tons of talent on display. Make sure you check that out. And of course, on October 26th, the Mid-Atlantic Prospect Day will come down at Troy Park in Elk Ridge, Maryland. We're going to have 17 Division I programs in attendance, coaching both practice and drill skill sessions to begin the day, and then games in the afternoon. We'll have representatives from Penn State, Loyola, Georgetown, Towson, UMBC, Delaware, Rutgers, Villanova, Princeton, UMass, Drexel, Bryant, Canisius, Sacred Heart, Holy Cross, Manhattan, and VMI. And we are all going to be in attendance, really excited about it. And Ty, as always, appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. As you said, check out next week as we put together a week-long recap of the first 50 days of recruiting the class of 2021.
No doubt. Thanks, Terry.
Joined today by Lee Corgan, the head of Corgan Sports Enterprises, which is, among other things, in charge of operating the Under Armour All-America platform. And there's a new addition to that platform for November of 2019, and we are going to talk to Lee about it. It's called the Callback Academy, and it is scheduled for November 9th in Richmond, Virginia. Lee Corgan, What is the Callback Academy?
The Callback Academy is really an extension of the summer's Under Armour All-American platform. And one of the great things about the Under Armour All-American tryouts, those regional tryouts that take place in 12 different regions around the country for both boys and girls, is that every one of those tryouts, we have a callback game. And at that callback game, every single college coach comes to watch that callback game that's on site. And it's not unusual for us to have 100, 150 college coaches all on one field watching the callback game, because they know obviously that we've whittled it down, so to speak, to the very best 40 to 50 kids in that specific region. And, you know, so that's the perspective that the college coaches have. So they're going to be there, number one. Number two, the perspective that the kids have, they know if they make that callback game, they're in really good shape, and it really helps jumpstart their recruiting process. And it's really a feather in their cap to be a part of that callback game in those regions. So all those kids that made the callback games in those various regional tryouts are invited to the Callback Academy, which, as you said, is going to be November 9th in Richmond, Virginia. And it's going to be a little bit different down there. We're going to do some different things. You know, we're going to have a sports psychologist, you know, talk to the kids. We're going to have NCAA recruiting and compliance guy. We're going to have Jay Dyer is going to be there as well, doing some strength and conditioning. And then we have an unbelievable staff of on-field clinicians, which are high-profile college coaches, John Tillman, Dave Petromala, Charlie Toomey, Kevin Corrigan, and Andy Shayer on the boys' side. And on the girls' side, it's Kelly Amonte, it's Kathy Reese, it's Jen Adams, and Janine Tucker. So they are leading the on-field portion of that, of the clinic. And then, in the afternoon, they're going to play games, just like those callback games all over the country in the summer. And of course, there'll be tons of college coaches filling those sidelines.
So let's just drill down on this a little bit more in terms of who, you know, is targeted to attend and what the callback game is. Because I think it ties together a couple of interesting threads in the way in which, you know, the development and evolution of the Under Armour Underclass platform has really kind of set the recruiting agenda over the course of the last 10 years. So you go to an underclass tryout. And, you know, up through, say, 2 or 3 years ago, everybody was competing for one team in each region. But then with the creation of the command and highlight divisions, there's roughly, depending on the region, somewhere between 6, 8, 10, sometimes as many as 12 teams in each division at each regional tryout. So, for example, I went to the DC tryouts this past year, predominantly focused on the older age group, but it was pretty tough to manage. There were a lot of players there. So college coaches attend the tryout, and, you know, say it starts at 5 p.m. They watch games over the course of the subsequent, you know, 3-4 hours, try to get as many players on their list as possible, and then say if in a particular, the highlight division, there's 10 teams, 20 players on a team, suggests there's about 200-ish players over the course of that tryout pool, then 44 are called back for that last game of the night, from which the 22 players who will make the highlight DC team then are extended an invitation to play in the underclass tournament, which was last summer and this upcoming summer, held at Meadowbrook in Baltimore. So what you're saying is that anybody who advanced to that callback game is among those who are targeted to attend.
That's exactly right. And, you know, as you know, I mean, you went to the D.C. tryout, they're outstanding, you know, region, and the Baltimore region also is a perfect region. So once you get to that top 44 game, right, the callback game in the summer, right, you know, and I know, really what you're talking about is probably 10 to 13, 14 stone cold locks in every region that are just, they're just very, very good, and everybody knows they belong on the team. It's really simple. But guess what? The next 10 kids that get placed on that regional highlight team might just be the following 10 kids that don't make the team. And so I think that all these kids that get cut kind of have a burn in their saddle. And they think, you know, I was that close, and I really feel like, you know, I didn't get on the team because of politics, whatever the reason may be. It's an imperfect science. And believe you me, I've been wrestling with it for 10 years and I'm in those rooms. But nevertheless, the kids that are in that callback game are high quality kids, and everybody knows it. The stories of the kids that didn't make the regional teams but still got outstanding scholarships and had great college careers is, you know, by the hundreds. So it's something we're really proud of, and I think this callback academy is really going to be unique, and it's really going to give those kids a second chance, you know. And I also know that kids that even made those regional teams are still coming to the callback academy anyway.
So why? What, you know, you've kind of laid out both who is targeted for attendance and what some of the features are, but I guess, you know, to put it directly, like, why did you want to create the Callback Academy?
Really, the number one reason was we were looking to extend the brand throughout the year. So we were meeting Corgan Sports Enterprises and the folks from Under Armour, and they were really, really interested in extending the brand throughout the year and finding a way to do a complimentary event to what we have going on in the summer. And so this is what we came up with. And it really kind of took 2 years of noodling through it and the whole gestation process to come up with what we've come up with. And part of it was also providing a unique platform, you know, for these kids and a different kind of experience. So that's where all the clinics come in. That's where the NCAA compliance, the sports psychology, as well as the Jay Dyer strength and conditioning. That's kind of where that stuff comes in.
And not only that, but Inside Lacrosse will be on site to capture headshots, other types of information from athletes, including which colleges they're interested in attending, and a whole lot more. So really excited to check this out and be a part of it. Obviously, for any first-year event, there are a lot of unknowns, but there's also a lot of excitement. How do you characterize how excited you are for November 9th?
We're excited and nervous. Of course, we want everything to go smooth as silk, you know, and one of the reasons we chose to do it in Richmond is because of that. The facility is awesome. It's 9 turf lighted fields. So we won't be rained out. We won't be field conditioned out. You know, that's the first thing that's nice to know there. And, you know, we just want to, people are going to come up, are going to come. Clearly, our registration, we're almost sold out, actually. So we're right there. So we're not worried about getting the kids. The college coaches are going to come because they know all those kids made those various callback games, and that means they all know they can play. So I think we got a winner here, but you never know. And we're going to really work real hard to make sure it's smooth for all. And one of the things also we thought, all these kids are coming, they're not coming with their team, okay? And I coach a club lacrosse team, as you know. And so a lot of times when we go on the road, you know, you get 3 or 4 parents and they're piling all the kids in with them, and you got, you know, 4 kids in a hotel room. Well, you got to remember, all these kids are individuals. So every kid is probably coming with their mom or dad, all right? So then we thought, well, why don't we create a little something for mom and dad? So that is exactly what we're doing. On site at the venue at River City Sports Complex, we're going to have a gigantic tent. And in that tent, we are going to have the NCAA compliance and recruiting guru speak to them, as well as Greg Dale, our sports psychologist, who's very well known in the industry. And he's going to talk about how you handle your kids and, you know, some of the things, the do's and don'ts as a parent with a kid who's playing competitive sports and obviously trying to get to that next level. And so I think that'll be a valuable proposition for the parents as well.
So you mentioned, obviously, having a winner on your hands, and certainly, as I mentioned at the top, the Under Armour Underclass Tournament has become one of the landmarks in the summer recruiting landscape, and it'll undergo a pretty substantial change for the second year in a row. Two years ago to last year, you shifted locations, and this year the date is going to undergo a pretty substantial shift, moving back 2 weekends into the middle of July. Can you explain what the thought process was behind that?
Yeah, sure. There's a couple reasons for that. Moving it back was number one, because next year, our date would have fallen right in the middle of the blackout period for the men's college coaches. So we wanted to make sure that we were having our event during an open recruiting period. So that's the first thing. The second thing, moving back 2 weeks, really helps our staff, Corrigan Sports Enterprises, as we go around the country and conduct those regional tryouts. Last year, we had multiple days and multiple weekends where we had multiple tryouts going on at the same time. And so we were spread very, very thin. So I think this upcoming year, we have a whole another 2 weeks to finish all those tryouts. So what that's going to do for us is that's going to allow us to get from point A to point B in a timely fashion and really do a great job putting on the tryouts. So that's the what was behind the whole date change, which we're excited about, number one. And number two, the venue, as you mentioned, we moved from Towson, and they had some construction going on with their fields, to Meadowood Park, where we were able to put all the boys' underclass games and the girls' underclass games in the same venue. So it made for a much more robust, vibrant area, and there was a lot of people buzzing around there and having a ball, and it really worked out well last year. And of course we utilized St. Paul's as well, which they have a great facility. There's turf, side-by-side turf fields where we were able to have all the championship games, and we had a few other games up there too. So we're excited about that as well. And you know, that was the first time we had it at Meadowood and in St. Paul's, and so there were some lessons learned, of course, and there's a couple things that we can do better to make it smoother for our audience. So we're looking forward to improving that.
Well, Lee Corrigan, we really appreciate your time on the IL Preps podcast. Of course, always exciting developments going on in your world, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you, Ty.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.